on this episode of Comedy Rewind. How does The Truman Show echo Jim Carrey's real-life experience in Hollywood? How ahead of its time were the themes of reality TV, surveillance, and privacy? What kind of lawsuit are these people facing when Truman finally breaks free? All of this and more on Comedy Rewind.
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 Push rewind. I thought this was a comedy show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Comedy Rewind. We are powered by Audio Technica and Manscaped as we rewatch the great comedies of the 1990s. I'm your host, John O'Peck, and joining me, the world is watching us here in his home studio. It's DJ Payne. How you doing?
How are you, sire?
Yeah, very good.
I've got all the lines here ready to go from The Truman Show, okay. To be able to say at the beginning, but I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to be very thankful that this is my third entry into the wonderful world that is Comedy Rewind.
I save all the juicy ones for you too, don't I?
I feel so blessed. I mean, the first one we had the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
The second one was
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day, which was absolutely
phenomenal.
There's
always all these layers of philosophy to dig out in each of these things.
Exactly. And now you've brought me one of my all-time favorites, and so much to be said about it. Truman Show. So good.
So good. I love this movie. I've always liked this movie. And I think it gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
Time goes on.
Yeah. Some parts of it do.
Mm. I guess I think that it might be almost overstated how influential, or not influential, but how prophetic it is. Because there's parts of it where I go, actually, it's not quite what people make it out to be. But yes, we'll get into that as we get through
exactly.
It. I guess, first of all, what are your personal memories with The Truman Show?
Well, it came out in Australia late 98. Have I got that right?
September, yeah.
Yeah, September 98. So I was living and working in Geelong as a single guy in my, late 20s? Yeah, I was late 20s. And I went and saw this film at the Village Cinema in Geelong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I ended up seeing it a couple of times.
Okay.
Because it was, so, so good. And it's from, I need to say it right from the beginning, it's one of my favorite directors of all time. Peter Weir, the Australian legend. And he's one of my all-time favorite directors. And, the fact that he was working with Jim Carrey, it had a lot of hype around it when the movie came out. Mm. I mean, Jim Carrey's star had ascended. It wasn't ascending, it had ascended. He was up there.
I think he'd just done Liar Liar and what else?
Cable Guy.
Yeah.
And I really like Cable.
Obviously after those huge movies in like the 94.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so he was Ace Ventura, The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, Batman Forever, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, Cable Guy, Liar Liar, and then The Truman Show.
Yeah.
So The Truman Show was a real departure for him, for Jim.
Big time.
And also partnering with this legendary director, Peter Weir, I was so excited. And I think the excitement for me when I saw it made me have to go see it again, let it distill and go watch it again. That's my memory of it from back then.
Did you head into it thinking Jim Carrey's going to ruin this? Because I feel like there would have been people at the time that thought, this is a guy, this is The Mask, this is Ace Ventura, what's he doing in this movie?
Look, you brought up something that we can get into straight from the from the get-go, which I like. I've got a love-hate relationship with Jim Carrey, big time, and I've had it right from the beginning. I used to stay up late at night on random television channels and VHS, trying to program VHS tapes to tape In Living Colour.
Oh, I didn't even realise it was on here.
It was In Living Colour back then. And I loved In Living Colour. Someone who, this suburban white kid who loved hip hop culture, in the 80s and 90s. I loved In Living Colour. And Jim Carrey was like this, he was the bizarre white dude on In Living Colour, and this weird Canadian. And he was a bit of a, really avant-garde, weird, funny fella. And then all of a sudden, within a couple of films, he became the biggest thing since sliced bread. I hated Ace Ventura, hated The Mask, but I loved and saw multiple times in the cinema Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
To this day, I think Dumb and Dumber is one of the greatest comedy films of all time. The original one, the very first one.
It's my favorite I think it's my favorite comedy ever.
Yeah. Probably the best 90s comedy. You know, it's at least it's way up there. As far as laugh out loud over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, and Jim Carrey is just priceless in that. I really like The Cable Guy as well. I think he's made some other, you know, really good films. I think I like him when he's more dramatic. I mean, you know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, you know, come on, one of my yeah. favorite films of all time. But him as a human being and watching him as he's gotten older and crazier and more deranged in his real life, you know, no offense, Jim Carrey fans, there's a love-hate relationship with him.
What do you think about what's happening with him lately? Like, does that make him more endearing or...
No.
You know, because I feel like he's... I just don't understand what's going on. And we will get into that because it kind of relates to what happens to Truman in this movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's had enough of some of the stuff that happens in Hollywood and it's like messed with his head.
I think he's been messed up from the very beginning, to be honest with you. Don't forget, he went from this into Man on the Moon, which is the...
Andy Kaufman.
The Andy Kaufman biopic. And they've just released, you know, just a couple of years ago, they released the behind-the-scenes documentary about the making of that film. And the reason why they didn't put it out like for 30 years or whatever is because Jim Carrey is one of the most horrible people in Hollywood. That's just the stat. That's one of the reasons why
he was during filming that, at least. He hasn't got a reputation like Chevy Chase.
No. But I've got a lot of issues with him. I don't like his politics. I don't like his worldview. I don't like his view on family, relationship. You name anything that's important to me, he comes at it from completely the opposite. Yeah. I think he's one of the most self-obsessed, narcissistic human beings ever.
He's an anti-vaxxer, isn't he?
I don't know. I really tuned out.
His missus, like Jenny McCarthy, was like the leader of that movement. But anyway.
And he's been involved in some really horrible stuff with, you know, cheating on people, you know, women. And there's a horrible backstory to him. And all these different stories around Jim Carrey just makes me go, I don't think I'd like him at all. Though, when he's at the top of his game in acting, I think he's second to none. Mm. What he's able to pull out in the performances, both in The Truman Show and something like, you know, Eternal Sunshine, phenomenal.
Yeah, this is a movie for me that is that gateway drug into his dramatic career. Because it's a comedy. We're talking about it on a Comedy Rewind podcast.
Yeah.
But there's these glimpses, and it's more than just glimpse. Like, I think Dumb and Dumber had a glimpse of dramatic capabilities in one of those early scenes.
Yes.
Listen to episode 2 of this podcast for my thoughts on that. But so there was a glimpse there, and then this is, okay, let's see what you can do.
Yeah.
And he really does it. And he's funny because he's Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
But he's not trying to be funny. He's not making stupid faces and doing stupid noises and usual shtick.
It's such an interesting choice, and it shows you what a genius Peter Weir is as a director, that right from the beginning, as Peter Weir was tagged, and you know, you've probably read all the material, there was multiple directors lined up to be able to do it, and there was multiple, there was multiple iterations of the film and all that type of stuff. And once Peter Weir was attached, his first pick was Jim Carrey because he really loved Ace Ventura.
Yeah, which is bizarre.
Which is so bizarre. It's like, what did you see in Ace Ventura that you thought this would be great for Truman? And he loved him so much so for the role that they were willing to put the film, the production of the film, on hold for about 2 years until he was ready to be able to get involved in the production.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting that after this, which we'll get into a bit later too, he did start to do these more dramatic movies. I think... You mentioned Eternal Sunshine. For me, that was his peak, like in drama. And I just wonder why he's never been able to get back to that. And I just think he has a hard time picking the right films.
Yes. I don't know where Jim Carrey's at these days as far as what roles and stuff. Look, I have enjoyed what he's brought to the television show he's doing at the moment. Kidding. Yeah, Kidding.
I really like that too.
Yeah.
It's with Michelle Gondry again.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I love Michelle. I love his work. I love what they've done on Eternal Sunshine. But the reason why I like what he's doing at Kidding is because I really am repulsed by that character that he's playing, like I'm repulsed by Jim Carrey.
Oh, that's fine.
So there's a level there that I think they're playing with his persona on that television show as well.
That's such a wholesome character. I can be repulsed by it. So my memory of this, as well as what I said before, was seeing the iconic poster.
Yes.
With the many, many composite images of his face, like clips from the film that was put together by an artist.
Yeah. And did you hear how much that cost the first time they did that?
$75,000. And now I feel like... I remember seeing that in a big like cutout of it at the cinema, being like, "Wow, that's cool."
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I'm pretty sure you could just color grade it to fit, or put a picture on top of it and turn the transparency down.
Exactly,
like
exactly. There's multiple. I remember this was the beginning around that era when, there was multiple Star Wars posters everywhere. There was a Yoda that everybody had for a while, made up of all the different scenes of Yoda from the Star Wars films. Those. Making pictures from multiple pictures, but I think this was an actual artist doing it by sight. Yeah. I don't know.
If he did that by like manually, then good on him. He earned
$75,000.
So this is a movie that, similar to Groundhog Day that we did last time I was here, it's been analyzed as like a thesis on like religion and Christianity and meta philosophy and existentialism.
Yeah.
There's some great themes about like simulated reality, surveillance, privacy, obviously, and the biggest one probably reality television, because even though there were probably some, hidden camera shows that had existed, reality TV as we know it wasn't a term. Did you have any sense when you watched this that this was something that could become a thing? Because the people involved in it certainly didn't sound like they were, and they're as surprised as anyone that it seemed to be as prophetic as it has been.
Well, at that time, we were aware of, there was the Real World from MTV, which was like 92, 93, 94, around there. Then around about 95, we had the Big Brother, the whole Big Brother television wave happened.
Yeah, sure. I didn't realize that started that early. It didn't hit Australia till like 2000.
I think it was. I think it might have been. Really? You sure?
Yeah, because I was in high school.
And you remember when it came out? I could be telling lies. I've got a feeling like Big Brother somewhere was, that type of reality television show. Like when we thought, the reason why I say that, like both the real, real world and Big Brother, their idea of reality television programs is very different to what we think of reality television programs now. It was more about putting strangers in a house or putting strangers in a scenario and filming them with hidden cameras, though that they're aware that there's cameras there. That was the idea of this. So this was sort of playing on that type of idea of reality television to a different extent. Like what happens if you were doing that type of idea, but we own the child in it and it's, that type of thing. So, it was... So to answer your question, I was aware of it. I was much more interested, to be honest with you, with the metaphors around philosophy, religion, worldview, and, identity and all that type of stuff than I was on like – and even watching it again now and having my boys watch it and my wife who had never seen it before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Benita had never seen it before. And my three boys who are, 16, 14 and 12 – none of them had seen it before, so I ended up watching it a few times with them, them sort of separately. They all loved it; they were all blown away. But the reality television aspect of it was sort of like a bit goofy to them, living in 2020 all these years later. So they were much more interested in why he was doing what he was doing, how he worked it out, all that type of stuff.
It is interesting. I think Jim Carrey has even mentioned it in an interview I read where. It was this show where he was forced to be part of it without knowing. And now it's the opposite where people are trying to make themselves reality stars or social media stars by putting the camera in front of their own face.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I think that's a kind of an interesting contrast.
It is, and that's why I think, I don't know, like I've seen a lot of both articles, YouTube videos and reviews on The Truman Show, like people reviewing it now in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. and they all want to talk about that aspect, social media and people wanting to live vlog their life and the Casey Neistats and everything like that, watch my great life. That's why I sort of think, and I go, this is my personal take, I think you're forcing, I don't think The Truman Show was some sort of prophecy of what's to come, because that's not what has happened. It's been the opposite of that, yeah. if anything. So I'd sort of go, I understand what they were saying about reality television at the time, though the script was sort of written, it, you know, in a time where it sort of wasn't really trying to make a commentary about that.
Yeah.
So
I think where it's prophetic is that the fact that it's the biggest show in the world.
Yes.
And now it turns out people are willing to just watch people live their lives and do whatever.
We're up to season 4,000 of the Kardashians, you know.
Exactly. And like they're a rich and famous family, so there's a bit of, you know, that factor to it as well. People want to see what it's like. But you look at people like YouTubers, people on Twitch, and they're just sharing their like you yourself do like these Instagram live, streams, live videos and everything. So part of the problem.
well, that's
you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I think. That's where I'm saying that I think it's actually the opposite of what The Truman Show was sort of saying, that, you know, reality television, you know, in their mind, this reality TV world had to be something that was orchestrated and, you know, a small country dedicated to it and all this type of stuff, when in reality, people are much more interested in the authentic someone sharing with no budget. You know, that, you know, so I don't know. That's why I'm sort of, that's for me, though we're having an interesting discussion about it now, I hope, that's the least most interesting thing about The Truman Show is this discussion about reality TV and people wanting to stream their lives, because I don't think The Truman Show is really about that, to be honest with you.
I think one of the other parts where it was advanced is the concept that it's possible to film everything.
Yes.
And it's like, well, we literally have cameras everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not only that, but there's cameras in space that can, you know, check the number plate on your car.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah. The microscopic, you know, there's a camera in the ring, there's a camera in the necklace, there's a camera everywhere.
So as much as parts of it feel really far-fetched, it feels like if we really wanted to, we could probably pull this off now. Like, maybe not like the simulated ocean and the simulated weather.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, like the technology, you know, and that's, you know, we'll probably get into this a little bit later on. You know, it's definitely the technology that has dated, you know, the movie in one sense. But there's a charm to how simple the movie is.
There is,
you know?
Yeah. Cool. A bit more about the movie. Jim Carrey won Best Actor at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
The first of back-to-back with Man on the Moon the next year.
Yep.
Didn't get an Oscar nomination for either one, which is interesting. They don't like him, I guess. He's too goofy.
Yeah.
But he did get an apology out of Siskel and Ebert on their TV show for saying that he would never have a career after Ace Ventura.
Yeah, I went back and watched the actual review of Siskel and Ebert when this movie came out, and they absolutely loved it. They actually, I mean, they were, like most film reviewers, you know, serious of that time, massive fans of Peter Weir. And they both were like, they both said the same phrase, this is the turning of a tide of we're getting back to films about ideas, films about concepts, films that we're going to be talking about this film for decades. And they're right. They were right.
Yeah, well, here we are.
Exactly.
And it was only a movie that was only made for $60 million, which even for just the fact that it had Jim Carrey in it is a huge pay cut for him, because I think he was pulling like 20 plus around that time.
And he took a pay cut to it. Peter Weir, one of the reasons why Peter Weir got given the job was because he said he could bring it in under budget. They originally were talking to other directors like Brian De Palma and having a budget of around about $80 million.
Okay.
They talked to Peter Weir, and Peter Weir, being the smart Aussie that he is, said, I'll do it for 60. I'll bring it. And he did. And the first thing that he did is he went to Jim Carrey and said, I really want you, you need to take a pay cut.
Yeah, right.
And so he took about $10 million less than what he usually did. Mm. You know, I think he was paid a total of $12 million of what I read.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Crazy. And while we're mentioning Peter Weir, Andrew Niccol was one of the producers and screenwriters.
Yes.
Kiwi, responsible for Gattaca.
Yeah.
A few other great movies too, but
yes.
He seems to be pretty heavily involved in this success of this film.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to read, we might get this to in the trivia part, actually, the original tone,
yes,
of this movie.
Yes, yes, yes.
Crazy. But since we're talking about critics, the Rotten Tomatoes score for this, do you want to guess or do you know it
already? I didn't even look. It's got to be good. I mean, it's got to be 90% or something.
95.
Oh, even better. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not surprising. It's a movie that's hard to... it's hard to watch this and imagine someone hating it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I can see someone saying, it didn't work or there's plot holes or something. But just watching it and not being, like, captivated by the concepts and
yes.
the way that unfolds is, yeah. is hard to imagine. The LA Times wrote, The Truman Show is emotionally involving without losing the ability to raise sharp satiric questions as well as get numerous laughs. The rare film that is disturbing despite working beautifully within standard industry norms. I think that sums it up really well.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's we'll get into the trivia of it later on, but the double impact of the New Zealander, what's his name again? Andrew Niccol, who was a writer-director in his own right. He was hoping to be able to direct this film himself, having written it, but because. And even though Gattaca did okay as a bit of an arty type of film, they felt there's too much writing. Like the budget was way bigger, and that's why they looked for another another director. But he, as you said, like the original tone of it was going to be a lot darker, and you can see that from the films that he's made because he's made like he made Gattaca, and he's very interested in science fiction. Somebody being the wrong person out of place type of thing. He made that Simone.
Simone, yeah.
He wrote The Terminal. He wrote The Lord of War, directed The Lord of War with Nicolas Cage. In Time, that horrible movie with...
Timberlake?
Yeah, Justin Timberlake. The Host, Good Kill, Anon. He's done...
I like the idea for In Time.
Yes, exactly. Cool, yeah, yeah. He's really good at coming up with these concepts.
And The Terminal, another one, like a guy that's stuck in an airport. Wow, yeah. That's a cool idea.
Yeah, so he's good at coming up with these really interesting concepts about a person sort of out of their interest. I mean, I think The Truman Show obviously being the most interesting one that he's done, but I would have, I mean, having said that, I love Gattaca. I love that film, Gattaca. But... I still would love to see his version of this on the big screen, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much written about this that you can probably find out what his version would have been.
Yeah.
But anyway, DJ, number one song when Truman Show released on the Arias, September 98.
I should have looked this up. I knew you were going to ask me.
You're not supposed to look it up. I know. That's the point.
Look, oh boy, 1998. What was?
I'll give you some hints. It's a big, big ballad. It's a big...
The Titanic song.
No. That's 97, I think.
Okay, so I was going to say Celine Dion. No idea.
Not too far. It's a kind of 80s associated rock group.
Aerosmith?
Yes.
Oh, which from 98. I can't remember.
Appeared in another blockbuster.
Oh, the Armageddon one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what's that song? I've forgotten the name.
Don't want to miss the thing. So Armageddon must have come out around this time.
Yeah.
In the Billboard charts where in America where the movie released in June, it was The Boy Is Mine by Brandy and Monica.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Which was number one for like 3 months.
Yeah. Forever.
Yeah. What Have You Done For Me Lately? There's a good cast of this movie, you have to say.
Yes.
Jim Carrey, we've mentioned Kidding, Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't know what he's up to next apart from a sequel to Sonic, but I hope it is something with Michelle Gondry.
Yeah.
Like a movie because it's such a great partnership and he gets the best out of him, I think.
I think they are both working really well. And the team that they've assembled for the Kidding series, the other directors and the art directors and stuff like that, they're really pushing some barriers on that film, which is great.
Laura Linney, you would have seen in Ozark if you check that out on Netflix.
Yep.
Noah Emmerich, who plays the best friend on this show.
Marlon. He is the classic, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
In movies. He's the that guy in movies. Oh, that guy. He's in the... You never remember his name.
He's got a face that, like, yes. You know, he just... He's not, like, traditionally good-looking or anything. No. He's just, like... A guy. He looks like everyone's best friend.
Exactly. He's a great character actor, and he's always really enjoyable. Every time he pops up, I'm like, oh, it's that guy.
There's so many people like that in this movie, too.
Yeah, yeah, there is. Heaps.
So he was in Space Force, another Netflix one. He played like the head of the Air Force with Steve Carell. He was on The Americans for a bunch of years.
Yes.
And another Netflix show, The Spy, he did with Sacha Baron Cohen, which is a pretty serious... I didn't get too far into that because I wasn't feeling it, but he was in that, I think, last year.
Okay.
Ed Harris, Westworld.
Classic. It's almost, I would love somehow if they could write that the Ed Harris character in Westworld was somehow related to the Christoph character in this. And it shows you, like...
It would work, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, Ed Harris, you know, he looks old, or at least he's made to look like an older person in the Truman Show.
He was only 15 years older than Jim Carrey.
Yeah, yeah. And now, like, he's still going, you know, he's that class. I really like Ed Harris. And I think he, you know, even though we only get him towards the end of the film, you know, other than that opening with, his, you know, opening dialogue, he is, I love him. I love him. And I think he's really good in this.
And almost didn't make it into the movie because Dennis Hopper bailed on day one. Apparently, which it would have been interesting to see him play the role. He did a similar role on Ed TV a couple of years later, but I think it worked out pretty well.
Peter Weir says there's only two times in his life he's miscast. He's very big on casting. Okay. Peter Weir as a director. His famous quote is, "If you get the right cast as a director, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah,
you know, your job's done." And he says, there's only two times in my whole career I miscast somebody. And he won't mention any names, but I think we can fill in the blanks and realize that Dennis Hopper was maybe not a great fit for this role.
If he bailed on the first day, then Paul Giamatti, another that guy.
Yes.
Until probably recently, he's been doing Billions. And I've been watching Billions this year. It's been my binge kind of show. Not binge because we're watching with Hannah, but we watch it like at night over like the course of a few months. And he's so good in that. And I think for a long time, he, similar to Noah Emmerich, is one of those, oh, that's the guy from the thing.
Definitely. Interesting to note that him and Jim went from this
to Man on the Moon.
Man on the Moon working together. It was funny.
Yeah. And this guy's not a big part of the movie, but I wanted to shout him out.
I know who you're going to say.
Joel McKinnon Miller.
Yes, Scully.
He plays Scully on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I was like, hey, it's Scully. I haven't seen this movie since I watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Sporting a terrific flat top.
He always does. It's his thing. He's another guy like Emmerich that's like, oh, it's that guy. Yeah. I've seen him in something and you would never know what it would be.
Yeah.
Except for... Now Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Exactly.
And he's always playing a cop or
garage attendant.
Security guard or he wears the uniform well. And I love him in this movie.
He's great.
We might mention him.
He's got a total screen time of like about 30 seconds, but it's fantastic.
He's good. Holland Taylor, who plays Jim Carrey's mother, she's got one of those faces where, again...
Been in everything.
I'm like... She looks like an old lady that I've seen in like a million Disney movies or something. She was in another one. Netflix is everywhere here, but Hollywood, the TV show Hollywood, which is like if Hollywood was woke in the 50s and 60s, and she plays like an executive in that. So still working. Good on her.
Yep.
She's getting on. But
most of the people in this film are still working, including someone who only pops up now and then. She does a lot of television, is the Sylvia role.
Oh, yeah. I didn't write that down.
Natasha McElhone, I think it is, playing Lauren / Sylvia. She's got that. And again, I think because they make such a big deal about how striking her looks are in this, you know, though I don't think she's like traditionally good looking in that sort of sense. She's a little bit, you know, off kilter in that, you know, in
she's
that way.
She's very memorable. She's got these striking eyes.
Exactly. And that's the whole point of the, you know, with Truman. But, you know, every time she pops up, and she pops up in television and movies all the time, she's another one of, hey, it's that woman, it's that person.
Yeah, so I guess apart from like Laura Linney, I don't know, maybe she was a character actor for a long time too, I'm not exactly sure, but apart from Jim Carrey, they did a great job of putting a bunch of that guy.
Yeah, and totally, that girls. Totally.
So we'll move on to the most 90s moment. And, you know, the setting of this movie, it's like almost like a Pleasantville kind of like Americana thing.
Definitely. Where
inspired by like the classic advertisements and that kind of thing. So there's not a lot of like technology that you see, but the thing that I wrote down was when he goes to a travel agent to book his flight to Fiji. Cause like I've never been to a travel agent. I know that they still exist and you know, some people still need them.
Can I let you know?
But
I went to a travel agent 2 years ago.
Why?
Because I had a very complicated trip to book, all right?
Okay.
I had like, you know, 5 stops in the US and I had a, you know, short amount of time.
That's a bit different to, I just want a ticket to Fiji.
No, yeah.
Get me the next one out
exactly.
of here.
It was different. Can I tell you, it is exactly the same as what you see in this movie. The computers are exactly, it's still the same. So the technology, even though we don't use travel agents to do those type of trips anymore, if you do go to a travel agent, it's pretty much exactly what you see in the Truman Show.
I wonder if they just go to like Expedia or the same websites that we do.
Look, there's all these kickbacks and everything they get. Yeah. I don't know. Shout out to all the travel agents listening.
Yeah. Send us, you know, at Johnny himself. tell me what you do. Tell me how it works. But I guess what I'm saying is the lack of like technology in this film, that there's no internet, even though the internet was a thing in 98.
Yes.
Having it inside the bubble of Truman's world would be an issue. There's no empowerment. He doesn't have the ability to like, you know, Google or do anything, because, you know, as soon as he types his name into Alta Vista or Yahoo, it's just going to come up with like the Truman Show.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most 90s thing, is just how it's almost like the movie set in 1992.
Well, almost. It could almost be set in 1950.
Well,
1960. And that's, I mean, we can get into our thoughts about it, but that you've tapped into something that we probably talk about later on. What I would do differently if I was making the film, I would have it more of a period piece. Yeah, like it just feels...
He is watching I Love Lucy as well, isn't he?
Yeah, and there's no mobile phones, but they've got modern cars, because it's this weird... We're making a living, we're making our money, our fortune from product placement. So we've got to have modern products that people want, but you can't have, you know, this technology or internet or mobile phones that it's going to take you out of it. I'll tell you my most 90s moment in the movie, and it's a little bit meta, is the famous scene that goes a zoom out through the, you know, the guy, you know, shutting the door on the dome, the dome being behind the Hollywood Hills, the dome being on the map and the world, you know, it is such bad special effects.
Is that the, like, you can see it from space?
Yeah, that's, you can see it from space scene. It's so bad special effects with the guy. It was mind-blowing at the time, but now watching it again, I was like, oof, that is really bad 90s special effects.
The product placement specifically feels very 90s, and not because it didn't exist before that, but I guess the way that she presents the ads and stuff, it reminds me of infomercials and stuff like that.
It's like an infomercial, but it's almost like, you know, an old radio, wireless, old timey, you know, product placement. It's almost like what podcasts are doing now these days. You know, the show is brought to you by this, and you have the, you know, the actor, or in our case, the podcaster, presenting the, you know, that you're
setting me up here.
You're getting uncomfortable here for an ad. No, but it's we've sort of come full circle, I think, for podcasting, where you have the presenter or the talent doing the presentation.
Yeah.
But it's so on the nose in the Truman Show, and I love the fact, especially when it comes to what's Truman's wife's name?
Is it Meryl?
Meryl, yeah. When every time Meryl does it, they do a zoom. They do a really artificial zoom on her every time she turns the camera. And when she doesn't know what's going on, or she pauses and has to think, she immediately goes for a product placement every time. So bad.
We'll get to that a bit later. But for now, it's time for me to tell you, speaking of product placement, that Comedy Rewind is brought to you by Manscaped, the very best in men's self-care, hygiene, and below-the-waist grooming.
I can feel the zoom coming right in on you now.
Manscaped products are now available in Australia and New Zealand. That's a new thing. And they just happen to specialize in what's going on down under. You know, DJ, things get a bit scrappy in quarantine. But once we're ready to leave the house, you know, we want to look good. We want to feel our best. We want to smell good. I bet Truman would have had himself a bit of a shave and a tidy up before, you know, meeting up with Sylvia in the real world.
Yes,
after so long. And, you know, good news for listeners, you can experience Manscaped's life-changing products around the world with a handy 8-bit discount code. And you might not think you need it, but just like Truman with his 3-in-1 Chef's Pal multi-knife, you're going to try it and then you won't know how you got by without it. The Manscaped engineering team has redesigned the electric trimmer, perfecting the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 with a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming incidents. They've got a USB-powered charging stand, LED torch light, waterproof tech for easy grooming in the shower, battery life, 90 minutes. 90 minutes! We're talking about 90s comedies here, but it's not the 90s anymore. We've moved on from the VCR. We've moved on from the VHS. We've got to update our grooming gear just the same way. So you can do it at manscaped.com. Use that code 8bit for 20% off and free shipping. That's 8bit, A-T-E-B-I-T, at manscaped.com.
Can I pitch a Manscaped, you know, tie-in with the Truman Show? Can we digitally edit the scene where Truman, you know, takes his wife with a chef's aid and does it? Can he have a Manscaped? And
he can have the Lawnmower 3.0.
But the problem is, it doesn't actually cut the skin.
Yeah, that's it's too, you know, the engineering is too good. The ceramic blade is just too good to actually hurt her. So
she could turn around and actually plug it and say, Truman, why are you holding it to my neck? It can't cut me anyway. Yeah. So it's a win-win both ways.
Definitely going to send that to Manscaped. Show them what we're capable of here.
Awesome.
Comedy Rewind. But yeah, that takes us to the next question, which is, what holds up the best?
Look, the thing that holds up, and I think the reason why my boys and my wife loved it, is the actual concept of, I feel like the world, you know, does the world gravitate around me?
Mm.
Do I want the world to gravitate around me? Do I want everybody watching? That the concept of asking who you are, what makes you who you are, challenging yourself and pushing yourself beyond what you're able to do is a timeless concept. I mean, we all know that, you know, sadly, you know, schizophrenics and, you know, different psychological disorders, some people are now diagnosed with a Truman effect or the Truman Show effect or some sort of Truman level thing where people feel like they are being watched or filmed or secretly filmed all the time. People are watching them. And so I think it taps into the timelessness, is it taps into something deep, deep within the human psyche that we've all experienced. We all are sitting there going, oh yeah, I identify with what Truman's going through in some level.
Have you ever thought, even if it was just for a second, like, am I on the Truman Show?
No, me personally, no. Sometimes sometimes I feel like in different times of my life where things have gone really bad, I think, am I on an episode of The Office from the BBC? Am I secretly on an episode of The Office? I'm looking for a camera somewhere. But no, I don't. I haven't. Me personally, I've never suffered from those delusions. I've got to ask now, Jono, have you?
I've had like moments where I've been like, is it possible?
Yeah.
And then I go, oh no, I've been to like all these countries around the world. Like, it's not possible unless the whole world's in on it. You know.
Did you watch any deleted scenes?
I watched the long, like 20-minute Harry Shearer.
Yes,
thing.
Yes, that is phenomenal.
Really good.
It's phenomenal. And there's a scene in that. I think it's in that one or another deleted scene that I saw. I'm pretty sure it's in that original extended interview thing with
Shearer. Michael Michaelson or something.
Yeah, Michael Michaelson. where it's like straight out of The Simpsons because of his only because of his voice. Where they've got a quick, it's like a 2-second scene where they've got a plane and it's got possible Fiji, where they were working out possible Fiji scenarios. Yeah. It's in one of the deleted scenes somewhere. So
well, they did the Grand Canyon thing, and they pointed out, like, when he's going through the family album.
Yeah.
He's like, you slept all the way there.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It looks very small.
Yeah, 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 yeah. The Mount Rushmore. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what did I say?
Grand Canyon.
Right, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Mount Rushmore. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that, yeah, I've been to Thailand and to, you know, America.
Could all, like, be scenarios, man. Did you sleep all the way there? That's
now you mentioned it, I did pass out.
Oh, dear. So I think the thing that stands up for me the most is the raw concept, the idea behind it. It's a great idea. It's not an original idea. It's been in, Philip K. Dick has written at least one short story with that as a concept. There was multiple Twilight Zone episodes that had that as a twist. It was all a television show and someone wasn't aware that they were on a television. So there's different ways of doing it. But this is, you know, I think this is the most realized version of it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, like, has it happened since then? Because you'd think someone would have tried to put a spin on it, like Truman Show crossed...
Yeah,
with something.
It's ripe for the taking. I've seen a few times where people have threatened, and Jim Carrey's been asked, rumors of Truman Show Part 2, like as an actual sequel with, and every time everybody involved in it has said, no, that's never ever going to happen.
I mean, I would settle for, like, a Super Bowl commercial, because Super Bowl commercials are the new, like, sequels for things that just can't get sequels, you know?
That's true. They've, like, done a few, yeah.
We get
the
Seinfeld reunion. Yeah, we get Macaulay Culkin.
We got Groundhog Day. Yeah, exactly.
And because the question for me is, what happens next after he walks through that door?
And this is, this is what makes Peter Weir such a great director.
It takes such self-control to just cut it, doesn't it?
Knowing how to cut and what the messaging is, is... That was the thing that was the most upsetting for the boys.
Oh, really?
Watching it. They were geared up. You know, I was watching them in the storm scene. They're like, you know, moving on the couch. They're fidgeting. They're like right in it with him. And then they're, you know, their eyes are getting bigger as it's getting closer and they're getting into it. And when it ends, that was probably the most disappointing thing for all of them.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, is that it? Is it? You know, and I think the score dropped a little bit. They're not mature enough to realize the beauty of having to answer those questions for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Because what else are they going to do? Like, he walks through the studio lot and then Sylvia's waiting for him and they hug and he kisses her.
Well, the original script was one of the shooting versions of the script, that because it was like 12 different versions of the script. One of the versions that Peter Weir and our New Zealand writer, Andrew Nichols, was working on was he walked into the
control room,
sort of like a control room or on the roof, and all the actors are there. The main cast is all there. And he's like, what are you doing? And they sort of were able to have a little bit out with him. And then they said, and then Christoph had a moment of reprise and said, I'm so sorry, opens up a door, and there's Sylvia. Oh. Christoph had worked out Sylvia to come, the actual person. I'm glad they didn't do that.
I wouldn't mind seeing a deleted scene if they filmed it, exactly. Just for your own curiosity. But I think the way they did it was perfect.
Because there is a deleted scene. We do see a deleted scene of that area where the actors are having like a table read.
Mm.
I think that's in the Michaelson, Shearer thing, where they're showing what's coming and everything like that. I think Jim Carrey was going to be walking into that room while he's got the actors there.
Yeah.
And he has it out with them, but they know it was...
Look, it wouldn't work because everyone was watching him where he was.
Look, and,
Anyway, I also had written down the one word concept because I just think that it stands on its own.
Great minds think alike. Yeah.
And there's a relatively great Vanity Fair article today saying the film predicted the scope of modern product placement as presented by Linney's... Is it Linney? Laura Linney?
Yep.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Impeccably named character Meryl Burbank.
Mm.
Privacy invasion and the existential quandary of whether to live for yourself or an audience, be it television or social media.
And that's a classic thing that they have to explain. This is how naive we were in the 90s. They had to explain what product placement was to us. You know, as us dumb filmmakers, we don't even blink about it now. We all understand the concept of product placement. Yeah. We are all jaded on it. We all know that it's happening. But this is like, no, this is how we're making the money that we make on this show. And again, in that deleted scene, we find out that the second richest woman in the world is Meryl, you know, Laura Linney's character.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, because some sort of kickback she gets.
Why is she getting a kickback for it, though?
From doing all the product placements.
Doesn't make any sense.
She's, you know, beloved character, yeah. You know, Truman's wife, guess, everyone wants to be her.
She's the voice for all the products.
Yeah.
That was the main thing that I thought held up well, that concept, I suppose. And also, for just how much this movie captured what Jim Carrey's life was like as well, because there's
definitely a meta level there.
Yeah, because he went into this feeling like he was being watched all the time and like everyone was watching him and taking something from him, and he was just there to entertain people.
Yeah.
I guess that's his job in some ways, but there was this whole scene where he almost drowned.
Yeah.
In the kind of the climax of the movie, in this big tank. And he had, you know, some moments with Peter Weir, like he was very angry. And after filming, he realized that he also was saying goodbye to this part of him that was like trying to please people.
Yeah.
And he then started to do maybe these more dramatic and like kind of mind-bending roles for a few years, even though, you know, he's peppered some comedies throughout that time. But none of them have been until maybe like a good 10 years later, they were never like the straight comedy.
No, no.
That you would expect him to do.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's definitely a meta level there for, you know, for Jim Carrey and the role that he was playing in his life, which is a really interesting way to look at it as well. And also, I mean, I love the fact that they toyed around very briefly the idea of Peter Weir playing when Ed Harris walked out, Peter Weir was like, maybe I do it. And that would be a whole meta level of the director actually being the director in the thing as well. But, you know, I love that. I love there was a story that Peter Weir told about the filming of this, you know, that Jim Carrey had gotten to the place in his career where he was almost directing himself in the films.
Mm.
And because a lot of his stuff was so physical, you know, they have the, what do they call it, video village in, you know, where they have monitor everything and they're able to play back everything that you see. So Peter's sitting by Peter Weir, a very old school camera, you know, old school film guy, hates the video village,
right,
and sits by the cameraman and looks at what he sees and trusts his gut and knows what's happening. And every now and then he might, if it's something in particular, special effects, he'll have a look. But he said straight away, Jim wanted to do multiple takes of everything and wanted to come back and look at, you know, the video to see, can I see it? And he said, within a week, you know, within that first week, I realized this is not going to work. This is not going to work. I'm directing the film. Yeah. And so he very cleverly sat down with Jim, and they had apparently had a really good working relationship on the film. He sat down with Jim Carrey and said, listen, does Truman know that he's being filmed?
Mm.
And he's like, no. And he goes, you shouldn't know you're being, like, he stopped him from looking. Just go with it. You trust us.
He appealed to the method.
You know, really tapped into it. And he had to, and it was a really, and like you bring up, I think for Jim Carrey, it was part of him letting go of this well-crafted persona he'd crafted up until that point.
Yeah, right. It's interesting. Like, I've got a quote here from that same article, that Vanity Fair one. He says that he signed off to this idea of being a crowd-pleasing guy. And since that moment, he said, I still have done really interesting stuff and made choices I thought were provocative, but I do it on my own terms. Mm. I turned into, and I love you, but I can't be what you want me to be. I'm going through that door like Truman. I'm bitter that you used me, that I was everybody's show but my own. And I was the only one that was left out of the joke, but I'm going to live my life now. That's really like heavy, and I don't quite understand his frame of mind, but I'm sure it makes sense to him.
Yeah.
But it kind of, when you know that what he went through in Man on the Moon, it kind of like leads, you can see how it kind of leads into that experience and him going kind of nuts. And the breakdown that he had a couple of years ago, the kind of matrixy kind of stuff.
Nothing is real.
Yeah. That's almost like what seems like what would have happened to Truman if he stayed in that world, knowing what was going on.
Yeah.
And Jim Carrey kind of has done that because he stayed in Hollywood and he stayed in the limelight, and he's kind of gone a bit
loopy,
nutty. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
I want to also, since I mentioned The Matrix, I also wanted to mention like the kind of comparison there between those two movies, because it's kind of like the, you know, the blue pill, the red pill.
Yeah.
You can leave this idyllic life, this life that we've created for you, where nothing will harm you, nothing will go wrong, or you can go and find out what life's like.
And they came out within the same year, didn't they? There was 98, 99?
Yeah, 99 was The Matrix. Okay. Yeah.
Well, not long after, because this was very late 98 when this was in the cinemas, and I think early 99 might have been The Matrix. So
yeah, it's like a film student's dream. Yeah, or a lit teacher's dream.
Yeah, exactly. That late 90s, it was all about, the films were about the ideas that were in them. Yeah.
Yeah, and while we're talking about what holds up really well, there was something I thought was a kind of a plot hole that I now realize is quite clever, which was the father disappearing in the ocean. It creates this aquaphobia or whatever it's called, with Truman not wanting to travel on the ocean. And I thought, I thought a few things. I thought, when he disappears, why don't they use his Ring camera to track him, because it's with him all the time.
Yes.
And I thought, how is he now sailing on the ocean?
Yeah.
When he's suddenly not afraid of the ocean anymore.
Yeah.
And both of those things, I realized, were cleared up. He gives the ring back to his dad because it was his.
Yeah.
And he realizes his dad didn't die in the ocean, therefore he has no reason to be afraid of it.
Yeah.
And he's already cottoned on to... It's this weird thing where he's kind of aware, but he's also questioning it, and he's not sure. And Lewis or Marlon convinces him that it's all in his head.
Yeah.
Then his dad shows up in the fog. And the very next scene, he's taking off.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought, how did he get from one to the other? But I guess he realized that, you know, he did see his dad as a homeless guy, and people carried him away. And it's like everything just came to a head at once.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And this is where I recommend, if you can, I think it's all on YouTube probably, the deleted scenes for the film, because there's an extended... You know, there's multiple things that happen to Truman in that period where he's questioning himself over a couple of days. They extend that out a little bit more. There's that great scene. There's a great deleted scene where he gives a sandwich to a homeless guy in a wheelchair, and he looks at the sneakers.
It's the same actor.
And then the next day he sees a jogger.
Yeah.
Or a couple of days later, he sees a jogger and he's wearing the same sneakers with the actor's name on it.
Right.
You know, taped on it. Like, so he gets it and he realizes that's where he's really beginning. There's quite a few scenes where he's really beginning to cotton on. And, you know, look, the greatness of the movie, because it barrels along, you know, it's just over an hour and a half, like an hour and 40 minutes or something like that. It is so efficient.
There's no dead space.
No, there is no lingering. It conveys so much in so little. And that's one of the amazing whirlwind journeys of it. But then on the flip side, there are moments in rewatching, it's like, oh, you know, he really does jump from this to this to this very quickly. And you sort of got to keep up with
him. Yeah, yeah. There's like the wedding photo where she's crossing her fingers.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a really great deleted scene that is hard to find, which has his best friend Lewis, played by Noah
Emmerich.
Emmerich. He finds him.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I've read about it. They're all out looking for him, he finds him, and he doesn't tell anyone.
He says, go live your dream type of thing. Mm. And it's a real redemption moment for him as well as a character.
Yeah, because he's a dog.
Yeah, because he's so... Well, you realise that he's...
He's kind of sympathetic as well, because he got conned into this as a child.
As a child. He's been there from a child. So this has been his entire life, being Truman's best friend. And he is Truman's best friend. Mm. But, you know... I wish they would have included that scene, because it really motivates... You know, you see Truman, if his best friend says, you're right, it's all, you know, go find her, he's powered to go. He realizes that everything that he's believed is a lie, and he goes for it. Anyway.
That's actually an interesting point. And that character is kind of a tragic figure because
massively
he has been in this studio for his whole life.
Yes.
He has become an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Because he's always promoting these beers and he's become an alcoholic and had to do rehab like three
times.
That's it.
That's in one of the deleted scenes. Yeah, yeah.
That's in this longer like documentary pull out that's part of the deleted scene. And it, like, what's the point? I'm thinking, like, what's the point of being in here and being like paid really well, but you can't leave.
Yeah.
Like, it's maybe for a holiday every now and then. But
and they allude to that with a fact where he says, you know, remember when, you know, I got sick with pneumonia, made me go out here and I was in hospital for 3 months or whatever it was. You know, you realize, oh, that's when he got away and had a real life somewhere else, you know, did something, got married or did whatever he wanted to do in the real life. But it is, those type of questions are fascinating, and I wish the movie spent a little bit more time on that, but you can't really.
Yeah, it's one of the things where we just said it's great how short and sharp it is, but I also would love to see a director's cut that goes for like 2.5 hours, just having the option of checking that out. Okay, obviously the movie holds up really well because we talked about that forever. What holds up the worst?
Yeah, I think the technology aspects of it. I think
Enhance.
Yeah, the classic. That is one of the best Enhance moments ever of any.
It's like, stop it! What's that?
Yeah.
Enhance it, and it's like his hand crawling out of
the... from like the worst pixelated screen shot you've ever seen. The technology. You know, of course, it's never going to hold up. You know, from the 90s. You know, I think whether it's the film technology. But having said that, I mean, in the 90s, thinking that you could have a camera like a GoPro stuck everywhere, transmitting information was a little bit ahead of its time. I think, you know, we could have it be a little bit more realistic, you know, with the camera work. Again, watching it multiple times straight away, very, very quickly, you realize they are totally fudging the camera. You know, the camera
They're
angles.
Not all hidden cameras.
No. We're seeing stuff, and even in the replays on the television, we're seeing stuff that could not be filmed from hidden cameras. You know, like...
any drone cameras.
And the way... I mean, that's so clever. The first time, even the first few times you watch it, you realize all you need to do is film something from a wide angle, you know, get a fisheye lens, put a bit of a blur around it, make it like it's inside that rubbish bin for a second, you know, that the neighbor carries in and out every time he sees him. and then you can get away with anything.
Yeah.
You can put any camera, long shot, this shot, telephoto, wide, put it anywhere, and we get away with so much within those with what the cameras can do. Part of me would love that to be thought of a little bit more, you know, the actual camera work, how they're doing it. Let's be a little bit more realistic what they could actually do.
Yeah, I think if they made it now, maybe we get to this a bit later, but maybe they would just literally film everything on a CCTV style or a hidden camera style or a GoPro style camera or people's smartphones or whatever it is.
Or you've got the technology now. You could say, hey, look, we've got cutting edge technology. It's 16K sensors everywhere. Yeah. We can crop and zoom and do whatever from this. You know, there's multiple ways to do it, make it a bit more interesting. But that to me, being a real picky nerd.
Oh, yeah. That's what this question's about. Because the first thing I wrote was implausibility.
Yeah.
Where... okay, so let's think about this in a nerdy way. This guy's pitch is, I'm going to film this kid for 24/7.
Yeah.
I've got a son. He's 10 months old. No one wants to watch him sleeping for 16 hours a day or whatever it is. Well, like, what do they do for the first like 5 years of his life?
Yeah.
Is it a show about... it's like watching the penguins at the zoo on the Melbourne Zoo stream. Like, they're not doing anything, and occasionally they might. But are his parents doing a storyline? Are they like...
I think this is one of the things where the original script had Truman at 20 or 19 or 18, like finishing high school, beginning college.
Yeah.
Right? Hence, we have those scenes of Sylvia, you know, the high school flashback where everyone looks exactly the same. No one's de-aged. They all look like they're in their 30s.
I think he had more of like the Lloyd haircut, the Dumb and Dumber haircut for that.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody else looks exactly the same, whether they're, you know, and again, they're supposed to be turning 30, you know, all of the cast there, as we're watching it. And we're flashing back to when they're 17 or 18. The original idea was this was happening as he's you know, leaving high school.
Mm.
That's a bit more believable, I think. I mean, because you got to think of this. The show has been, in the universe of this movie, the show has been on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 30 years. 30 years. That's insane. You know, especially in the light of that we're watching it ending, you know, they're watching the end of the Truman Show. But, you know, you do end up saying, could this be sustained for 30 years? And again, they've made him an insurance salesman.
Yeah.
You know.
Who wants to watch someone and sell insurance?
Exactly. There's
drama there. And he's got such a white bread kind of existence.
And he's an adventurous soul. And, you know, it's so twisted. And this is what gets into the darker elements of the movie that I love.
Yeah.
You know, it really is a commentary. I think the main thrust of this movie, what this movie is really trying to tell us, is you idiots will watch anything on television. As long as we tell you to watch it, you will watch it.
Christoph says people put it on to fall asleep too, this kind of thing.
There's a guy who apparently lives his life in the bath with Truman paraphernalia around him, watching Truman 24 hours a day. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that's
you know,
great.
There's a Truman bar. You know, the bar that we see is the Truman bar. They've got Truman merchandise, Truman hats, Truman everything.
Yeah.
So there's dedicated bars.
It is a good commentary on, like, I can't remember what TV show or movie it was, but it was like, why are you watching? I think it was Seinfeld. Why would anyone watch that? Because it's on TV.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a real cynical, jaded aspect of, I think, the idea and the concepts from the original scripts still in the, you know, in that element of the film. So especially, I don't know, we'll, you know, probably get into this later on, but I might as well say it now. Like the last scene of the movie, you know, when we think of the last scene of the movie, everyone goes, oh, it's Truman walking out the door. No. That's not the last scene of the movie. Truman walks out the door. Christoph puts his head in his hands, defeated. The last scene of the movie is back to the garage guys.
What else is on?
They go, what else is on TV? Yeah. And that is the point of the movie. It is so cynical. It is so jaded. It's basically saying, yeah, you idiots. You know, and to the point where, I mean, you must have read Peter Weir was trying to work out the technology in selected cinemas where they were going to put cameras in the cinemas, and halfway through the movie, you would see on the screen yourself watching the movie.
I did read that they were experimenting with that idea.
Could he do that? How he said it was impossible to do. So I think what the real concept and the real message of Truman, the Truman Show, is more about us watching entertainment, what that says about us, you know.
It's almost the opposite of The Cable Guy, the ending where he cuts out the cable feed and Kyle from Tenacious D like picks up a book and he opens the book.
Exactly. It's what else is on. Else is on. We're addicted to, you know, whatever the thing is. Because, you know, I mean, if we go with the concept and we think, oh, this is really, you know, going to happen, you know, there really is you know, this place and they've spent all this money, you know that at any time they've probably got a couple of other, as they say in the movie, this is, I can't believe they even said, you know, this phrase, unwanted pregnancies lined up, ready to go. They said they have five unwanted babies. They've probably got a line of unwanted babies ready to go at any one point if Truman accidentally falls off, you know, has a heart attack and die, or whatever, you know, happens. You know that within a week they've got Sally or whatever, you know, they've got another version of this thing happening in the universe.
While we're talking about these things, I was also thinking about, like, you just mentioned the budget, but, like, when he tries to leave town.
Great scene.
It's a fantastic scene.
Love it.
All these people that are just there in case he does something like that.
Yeah.
Like, are they're on full-time wages.
Yeah.
They're dressed up as in biohazard suits.
Yeah.
24/7 just in case he tries to leave town. It's a bit silly. Like,
Yeah, how quickly can they get into uniform, where they're going and stuff like that? Yeah. What is the scenarios? You know, once they realize that Truman is getting a bit edgy and he wants to get out of town, okay, we need to move a whole bunch of people down there. You know, again, you know, these are great things that we'd love to see more of, you know, if it was extended version.
That's it. And I guess, like, the thing that probably holds up the worst definitely is the, like, lack of consideration for this man's right to privacy.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Well, that's right out the window right from the beginning.
And, okay, so the corporation buys this kid, which seems illegal as well.
Yeah.
How much of a lawsuit do you think they're facing when he walks out that door and says, you didn't have my permission to broadcast and manipulate my life and steal my freedom away?
Like, yeah.
$1 billion?
Well,
they've made billions and billions off him, and he hasn't seen... What's he making, like 50K a year as an insurance salesman?
They better have some sort of nest egg away ready to give to him. And does he... The other thing I'd love to know, you know, you can explore this, you know, does he change his name? His name is given to him Truman Burbank. You know, does he then go, well, I'm not really Truman Burbank. What happens to him after that? Obviously... You know, we're led to believe that Sylvia will be right there ready to, you know, meet up with him, and they're going to live happily ever after.
Yeah, they might actually end up in Fiji.
Who knows? In the original script, it wasn't Fiji, it was Australia.
Yeah, which would have been nice.
I know, come on. So close, but yet so far.
I think we skipped a question. Most iconic scene. That's what it was. What did you have for that one?
Oh, most iconic scene. Well, I mean, there's so many. Too many to mention. I think for me... The first thing that springs to mind, I think it was because it was a trailer for so long. Maybe it was television advertising for the film. It's the mirror.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Mirror astronaut, you know, him drawing with the soap on the thing. That is fantastic.
Have you done it before?
Drawn on the soap?
I've done it. I've drawn the astronaut around.
I've never done that.
It's fun.
Oh, well, there we go.
Like, I want to see if it works, and yeah, it kind of works.
Yeah. And the other one for me, of course, and this is now getting to, like, this is where it almost becomes like a fantasy C.S. Lewis or almost a Salvador Dali painting, is the boat, the wall, and the steps and the door.
Yeah.
That is like out of dreams. That is like deep human psyche stuff right there.
Every time the boat hits the wall, it takes me by surprise. Yeah. I'm like, oh, there's a wall there. Yeah. Like, and then I rewound it and it's like, oh, yeah. When you know what you're looking at, it's obvious.
Yeah, and it's
mind tricks you.
And it's funny, like saying what doesn't hold up, like the technology, like if it was made today, it would be some sort of holographic, digital, blinky, you know, LEDs or something, you know, some sort of, you know, technology to do it. But the fact that it's a painted polystyrene, whatever it is, wall, there's something so quaint and beautiful about it that if it was a digital thing, you don't get the steps and the door, you know, the black rectangle that he steps into. That is so perfect, you know, for the end of the film.
It's definitely the, like, practical effects of the 90s come to life.
Yeah.
The thing I had for this, apart from the astronaut in the mirror, was the quote, like, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Classic.
The first time he says it.
Yeah.
The first time you hear it, you're like, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then obviously it's... reoccurring until he says it at the very end.
Yeah.
He takes the bow.
Takes the bow.
And he walks out.
Yeah.
And it's like, heck yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's probably... And that, like, expression is, as Jim Carrey's kind of a catchphrase machine over the years. But that's the one that I think lives on the most from this movie. Okay. Who would be the most offended by Truman Show?
Look, if you are offended by the Truman Show, please... get a life
at DJ Payne. Tell him what offends you. I agree with you. I think it's so inoffensive.
Yeah. Look, if you were going to be offended by rights, look, I have seen the only thing, I actually went looking for this.
Right.
You get the usual idiots who are offended by whiteness or maleness or, you know, heteronormative, blah, 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 you know, all the time. And it's like, guys,
I figured out what it would be. It would be his wife being like, basically prostituting herself, but
I guess
then it's like
it's there's not enough minorities in it, you know, there's the token black family that live across the road that repeat the phrase back to him, you know, when we see that. But look, it's if you're offended by those things, you're missing the point of the film.
Yeah, definitely. The Kardashians might be offended by it. Who knows?
Well, Kanye uses the Truman line quite a few times in his, you know, so this is a favorite film of Kanye West. So, you know, hopefully Kim's not too offended by that.
Does it pass the internet relevancy test? I think that, like, just in the general,
yeah,
it's in the lexicon, like you said before about the Truman Show delusion,
yes,
which is a thing apparently.
Yep.
And yeah, I think if you say, oh, it's like the Truman Show, like it's similar to Groundhog Day, it's just something that everyone knows what it means.
Exactly.
Much.
Yeah. Exactly. The, you know, and this is like, if this was being made today, the Truman Show in real life would be all about the memes and the GIFs and everything. You know, you'd probably see that within like Truman is a meme in the world that they've set up in the real world, you know, of the film.
Every week there'd be a new meme. Like
exactly.
The mirror thing would have been a meme.
Yeah, yeah.
Him mowing the clipping the lawn and sticking his butt in the camera.
Yeah.
Like that would be a meme.
Yeah. All of that stuff, he's already a living meme in the universe that they've set up. So there's a bit of meta commentary there. But, you know, as far as it's still internet relevancy today, even people who haven't seen it know what the concept is.
Yeah, for sure. How would smartphones and social media change Truman Show?
Well, it wouldn't. Because this is a controlled universe. Yeah. So there was smartphones in 1998. There was...
Not smartphones.
Oh, sorry. Well, there was...
Mobile phones.
Yeah, digital phones and internet. Yeah. But this is a controlled universe. Yeah. And the whole point of it is, you know, Christoph and the team making it can control what Truman has access to. So it sort of make... And that's one of the things that I think... I sort of bleed into a bit of Westworld. I'd love to see this sort of... Like, we've already mentioned Westworld. But I'd love to see... this a little bit more, you know, controlled. You know, there's still so much in there, like buying magazines. I mean, that's insane. They've got teams of people making magazines or at least editing versions of the magazines and newspapers so Truman doesn't read anything about himself. Like, you know, what the lengths they go into in this film where instead he could just grow up in a universe where magazines don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, like, isn't that easier, guys? You know, like, you know, or even television doesn't exist or whatever. Mm. You could, you know, that's, if I was making the movie today, I would love to play around a little bit with, you know, like, it's all a bit banal, the universe that he lives in. What I would love to see a little bit more experimentation. What happens if we tell him that, you know,
aliens,
the world is flat.
Yeah.
And he really believes, and everyone teaches him that the world is flat. Like, what is that like? You know, picking a silly thing, all the flat earthers out there are going, what are you talking about, DJ? The world is flat. What are you going on about, man? Don't you know? But whatever it is, you know, tell him that mermaids exist or whatever, like just some crazy thing, because you could do anything.
Yeah.
But they sort of give him this 1950s I Love Lucy life that, of course, you're going to get fed up with.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah.
I think if smartphones and social media existed, what would happen is one of these extras would like sneak in their phone and lose it, and he would find it and he'd be like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, I don't know, like they'd have like a background and it's like his photo as a background or it's like a Truman Show logo.
Yeah.
And that would be like another one of the hints. Yeah. I think that's something that they could play with. Or Sylvia or people on the outside are like trying to smuggle a phone into him so they can contact him or, you know, there'd be all these, like we mentioned the memes already, there'd be so many like people shooting footage in there.
Exactly.
And that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Could you make it today? It's kind of a similar question, but what would the 2020 version be?
I would love to. Okay, here's my pitch. Yeah. You know, and this is my, you know, this is my favorite segment of the whole thing. Every time we do this, is my favorite thing.
Okay.
And I haven't gone. Usually, I have pages. As soon as this segment rolls around, Jono rolls his eyes because I pull out pages of notes. I haven't done it this time.
You haven't recast the whole thing.
No, I haven't done the usual. I do have some ideas though.
Okay.
I think it would be an amazing Amazon Prime television series. You know, turn this into a series. Turn the Truman Show into a series. Make it darker. Make it a little bit more twisted. Make it a little bit more about the original script was about paranoia. I think there's more. I mean, when you really think about what Truman goes through in this film, in the second half of this film, it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
He goes through a horror movie. Like when he cracks and grabs the chef's aid and holds it to his pretend wife's neck, he's going through a total breakdown. And stretch that out, how he works it out, all the things that he goes through and everything like that would be amazing over a series, you know, a television series. And I would also like to go back to the roots of it, cast it with a younger, you know, have the actors be younger. And because I always like to work out, you know, who I'd love in it, my pitch for someone that everyone would love and that everyone would love to see as Truman and as that all-American boy, but, you know, a young man, is the wonderful Joe Keery. I think that's his last name. Maybe Keery, who plays Steve Harrington, the boy with the hair from Stranger Things.
Yeah,
he was in the ice cream parlor in the last series. You know, the original boyfriend, the jock boyfriend, who, you know, we carry on the journey with. But, you know, Joe Keery, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He's about 25, 26 now. He could play a lot younger. He's, you know, got that real youthful face. He's got the fantastic hair to begin with. And someone who's the same age of him in real life, actually I think he's a year younger in real life, is I would recast the best friend with someone who I think is a phenomenal actor, even though he's been in the worst franchise in the world, John Boyega. John Boyega, who can do an American accent like great. Finn from Star Wars, from the latest Star Wars trilogy. I think John is a fantastic actor. And there's something so sympathetic about John Boyega on film, even as Finn, you know, as the, you know, the recast stormtrooper, you know, from the Star Wars series. There's something about him that I would love to see. You know, and then you also, because if you're doing it again in 2020, you can't have an all-white cast like they've got now. That's like the unforgivable sin. But I would love to, but that's an, you could even redo it, talk about race in it, because you could have the Christoph character, you know, cast it all as a white village. You know, you could have, you know, all these different things. There's so many different interesting elements with given a bit more time than just an hour and 40 minutes for the film. You could go into all these different areas and flesh out the universe so well.
Thing is, they cast the movie in the 70s because that's when Truman was born, probably.
They
would have cast it an all-white.
Exactly.
And then they would have got to like now and they'd be like, okay, we need to get some more diversity. Yeah. Let's get a bunch of people moving into the town.
Yeah, and that's the other thing you could do in a television series. You could spend time, like you were saying, what are they doing when he's five? What are they doing when he's four? Again, I'm not suggesting that we do a television series over covering an entire child's life, but you have, you know, at least half a series or a whole bunch of episodes that cover those early days. Like if it is set, like if we have a 20-year-old now, then the set was built in the year 2000, you know, type of thing. So you could have, okay, what was the technology like in 2000? How do they build it up? We get a sense of that in the movie where young Truman on the beach is walking over the things and we can hear building noises and the father brings him back down. You can't go over there because they're extending his world as he's getting older. I think it's fascinating. The other thing which is crazy about the film is they've, you know, the set is behind the Hollywood sign. That's insane. I mean, that property alone is, you know, worth jillions of dollars. You know, you'd want it to be on the island of Fiji or somewhere absolutely, you know, insane. And you could be a little bit more creative, like, you know, bring a bit of the Westworld to it. You know, really, the other aspect that is, you know, why would you just have one Truman on a show like that? Why would you just have one child who was raised their whole life not knowing they're in a television series? Surely you'd have a whole bunch of Trumans in that you know, in that scenario.
More of a Big Brother kind of thing.
Yeah, there's so many different ways you could go with it. In you know, in recasting.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. And I would like what you say about the paranoia, where one of them figures it out and they're trying to convince other people.
Yeah,
and those people have seen weird things too. So there's maybe a pocket of people that have figured it out and people that don't believe it.
And then actors
trying to throw them off.
Exactly.
And then maybe someone figures it out and they're just like, let's go with it. Let's go crazy.
You did it today, you could be a lot darker where, you know, someone figures it out early. Oh, they died, or they had a tragic accident, or they left town, or whatever.
Or go super dark, you know, like the end of the Joker. When he's on the talk show?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like someone just going like, all right, I'm on TV.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
I'm going to go nuts.
Exactly. But there's so many different ways. And you know, you could even get, you know, I hate to get political, but you could get political on it where, or even no politics, like you could create a, you know, because it feels like he's still living in the world and he's still talking about America. There's even a hint in one point of it that he believes in God, which brings up a whole nother, you know.
Yeah, what was that part again?
There's a point.
Does he say like a quick prayer or something?
Somebody mentions a prayer. Someone mentions something about God or whatever. And I should have written it down because it jumped out to me. Because even the aspect of if you raised a group of young people, like again with my reimagining of Truman Show, it's maybe a whole class, a whole year level of a school is all like that, and we can see different things and cut to different people. But what, you know, if you make it that it's a different type of religion, or the Christoph character is saying that there's no religion or no God or whatever, there's so many different avenues you could go down with kids, you know. What does humanity desire? How do they work it out? All that type of stuff. So there's so many interesting things you could go down with that.
Yeah, I mean, I would watch that definitely. I love the idea of just turning these great older movies into TV shows.
Yeah, totally.
Just milking it, going, you know, we said how it was great in 90 minutes, but if you've got time to get deep into it and figure out how it could take it to the next level, it'd be really cool.
One entire episode is the Michael Michelson interview behind the scenes.
Speaking of that, we're up to the useless trivia section. And there is this 20-minute, I guess it's like an A Current Affair style presentation with Harry Shearer playing Michael Michelson.
Straight out of The Simpsons. Yeah. It's straight out of The Simpsons.
Great. And some of that, you just get so much extra detail about the behind the scenes of the Truman Show within the show, not the real life. We get tidbits like that his wife is richer than the Queen of England, which is ridiculous. And they said Oprah was the richest woman in the world. Was that ever a fact, or is that just like a Hollywood fact?
I think it's a Hollywood fact.
It doesn't sound real. Yeah.
Yeah.
He asks if she's paid per sex scene.
Yeah.
And that raises all these questions about, like, how does that work?
Yeah, and it's obviously true that she is.
Yeah, because she refuses to answer the question.
Yeah.
There were five women picked to court Truman, and she kind of fisted her way into being that one.
And we get a lot of one particular actress who was supposed to be one of them really disgruntled, you know, about how it worked out. It's really, really, really good.
Yeah, that's right. And then, as I said before, Marlon, so it's Marlon playing Lewis, or is it Lewis playing Marlon, his best friend?
Lewis playing Marlon?
Yeah, either way. No, I think his friend's Lewis. Anyway,
okay.
He's an alcoholic, as I said.
Yes.
And on that subject of him being an alcoholic and that kind of darker idea, we have hinted at a few times the original script being a lot darker, and there's a few things here that mentioned that went into that original script where there was apparently like a staged rape scene that Truman witnessed, and you know, someone needs help and he ignores them, doesn't help them, and the actress and the actor are just like, oh, well, that was weird.
Yeah,
like, why didn't he do something?
Yeah.
There was an angle where he was having an affair with a prostitute.
Yes.
And like we said, he has this such a white bread vanilla life that I can see an angle on this where they try and interject a bit of drama into his life, and they did that with his dad disappearing, and that's kind of the only thing up until...
Yeah, in the original script, it's Truman who's an alcoholic.
Right.
Because he's so despairing and paranoid in his life. Yes. He, you know. So, yeah. And it's like they're testing him to see how far he will go or what he will allow or not allow, you know, ethically. And he doesn't care about anything because he sort of doesn't believe anything is real. It's a really interesting, you know, concept. Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of territory there that you could work with if they were to revisit it, or if someone was to just rip it off.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just rip it off, DJ. We should write a screenplay for this TV series.
We're approaching Netflix soon.
Yeah. The Steve Buscemi Spark Plug Award.
Steve Buscemi.
A real spark plug.
There's only one person that can go to.
I've got some nominees.
All right, all right.
Let's give it to him. Philip Baker Hall, he's another great character actor, guy. He's the network executive.
Yes.
That's like, you're going to kill him.
Yeah.
One of those guys that just pops up all the time.
That's the my favorite character from my favorite one-off character out of Seinfeld.
Bookman.
Yeah.
The library investigator.
The greatest scene where you can see Jerry just cracking up because he's so good in Seinfeld. So good.
Yeah.
During your pee-pees and your wee-wees and your... Like, it's just... Anyway, so great actor.
I mentioned Scully already. I just wanted to mention him again because he is quite good. Like, he's like, oh, he's so disappointed when they have the sex scenes and they cut to like...
Yeah.
They fade out the camera.
You never see anything. It's just the curtain blowing in the wind. It's, you know, real disappointing. Again, if it was made today, it would be like, you know, now if you want to see the scene...
Pay $15 and head over to this link
exactly
on OnlyFans or something. Paul Giamatti, you know, I liked his, you know, he's not really in it until the last half an hour,
and we feel for him straight away because he doesn't want to send the lightning in, but he's being forced to.
And he's like, I won't do it.
Yeah.
And then Christoph like pushes him out of the way. But it's weird seeing him with hair. I've decided
because he's just so young in that.
So used to him on Billions, but I think Harry Shearer is the one that. Is that who you were thinking of?
Look, Harry's a close second.
Okay.
I've got to say Scully. Only because he's the last scene in the movie. He's given the last line in the movie. You know,
I guess Harry Shearer's role got cut down a lot. It's the deleted scene. If the deleted scene was part of the film, you might give it to him because he's great. He's got some really fun material in there.
It's even great. The deleted scene is amazing, but even within the movie, what he does is phenomenal, and it brings such a great understanding of the whole universe in such a great way. I don't know, but I just... The garage attendants sitting there... Watching with the TV,
and coffee.
Yeah, and then that they're given the last scene again. Scully is given the last scene of the Truman Show. That's so big to me. That's so big.
Sure. Well, let's give it to Joel McKinnon Miller, aka Scully. I'm sure he just gets Scully everywhere.
Yeah,
he goes That's all.
The man with the best flat top in the world.
Absolutely, straight out of a like gangster movie from the 40s or something. Is The Truman Show still a good movie? I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I think that if you haven't seen this, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. But if you know someone that hasn't seen this, make them watch it.
Definitely.
It's worth rewatching if you haven't watched it for a long time.
Yeah.
It's worth thinking about a lot of these themes and topics we've been discussing. And yeah, check out the deleted scenes too, because that adds a lot to it. And I'm even going to go and try and find like the ones that I haven't seen because... There's a few.
Yeah, there's a few. There's different releases and stuff. It is a fantastic film. It's well worth a rewatch. And you might go, oh, I've seen it plenty of times. Trust me. Just say, oh, look, I'm just going to watch the first 10 minutes and put it on. And you'll blink and you'll be at the end of the film. It goes by so quick. It captivates you and it really rolls on at such a clip. It's amazing. My one little asterisk with this is, the greatest things everyone will love about this film, The Truman Show, go and seek out the work. If you've never done it, and I know it's not comedy and this is Comedy Rewind, but go seek out the work of Peter Weir, the director, the Australian director. He, you know, you might know him from In Australia, he did Picnic at Hanging Rock. He did Gallipoli, The Year of Living Dangerously. Then he did Witness with Harrison Ford. Mm. Phenomenal movie. Yeah. Mosquito Coast, very underrated film. Didn't make any money with Harrison Ford again, adapted from an incredible book. Really good. Then he had the mega hit of Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams. And it was on the strength of that that he was able to make The Truman Show. He had done a over the top comedian in a dramatic role, in setting up this universe. He then went on to do before Truman Show, after Dead Poets Society in 1989, he did Green Card, which is a great feel good romantic comedy, and Fearless. Now no one has seen Fearless.
No, I never heard of it.
Fearless is the movie he did before The Truman Show. And he makes it, like, he takes like 5 to 10 years to make a movie, Peter Weir. He's not in any, you know, after Truman Show, he did make another film until Master and Commander in 2003. And then he made his last film, The Way Back, which is not a great movie at all. I really was so disappointed, in 2010. He's in his 70s now. I don't know if we'll ever get another film from him. But trust me, Fearless has got Jeff Bridges in it. And it would be in my top 5 films of all time. It's one of the greatest films I've ever seen, about a near-death experience, you know, and what fear can do to people. It's an amazing movie. Didn't make any money in the cinema. No one's ever heard of it. But if you watch all of Peter Weir's works, you get this thread through his work that, you'll, if you really appreciate the depth of Truman Show, you'll love his other films.
Okay,
just this bigging up my fellow Australian.
Sounds like you're working for him.
Yeah, I love. He's one of my all time favorite directors. He's amazing. Yeah.
The Way Back is actually a movie I was watching before I came here. But the 2020 Way Back with Ben Affleck.
Oh no. No, it's
playing a basketball coach. No. He's like a raging alcoholic.
Yeah.
Anyway, Truman Show. That's it. Check out the deleted scenes, check out Peter Weir, and check out Comedy Rewind in your podcast service of choice as far as ratings and reviews. We want to get those 5-star reviews up there, whether it's Podchase or whether it's Apple Podcasts. That's how you can help the show. Head over to the Patreon for 8-bit if you want to kick in a few bucks to what we're doing here, which is patreon.com/weare8bit. And as I mentioned before, the Manscaped code is 8-bit, ATEBIT.
Woo!
Little freebie for you, Manscaped. DJ, where can people catch you on socials?
Look, DJ Payne, DJ Paine. I am across everything. Probably these days, Instagram is my weapon of choice. Twitter's become a cesspool of political violence.
Become?
Yeah, well,
it's worse, always been pretty bad.
It's always been pretty bad. It's getting even worse. But you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. DJ Paine, Payne with an E on the end. And I would love a discussion about Peter Weir or The Truman Show or anything you want. I'm your man.
Very good. And you can catch me on socials at Jono himself, mostly on Twitter because I mostly have fun with it. I stay away from the discourse. It's fun to not have conversations on platforms that aren't made for conversations. just give your opinion and let it sit there and leave it. But anyway, for now, dear listeners, thank you for joining us on Comedy Rewind. Be kind. And in case we don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.